Okay, the next question will start with Mr. Lawler. Will you introduce and actively support legislation to mandate term limits for all members of Congress?
Wow, somebody did me a favor on that question. Without question, term limits are absolutely the way to go for Congress as well as for the U.S. Senate. I believe that part of the problem that we currently have in our nation is this entitlement mentality. Anytime you can stand up in North Point High School and tell your constituents that I'm going to go it alone whether the majority of my constituents are with me or not, that guarantees to me one thing. Someone has lost touch with their constituency, the Constitution, and their responsibility and accountability to everyday American people. But if you pass effective term limits, it will allow for people to go to D.C., do their job, and then come back and live under the same laws they passed on their citizens. I don't know where we get the audacity to think that we rise above those that we are sent to serve, especially when our tax dollars afford the very foundation of life that they're provided. So in terms of that, to keep from the aristocratic mindsets and monarchy postures, we have to do something where it comes to term limits and send folks back home to live under the laws that they passed amongst their citizens. I'm an avid fan for term limits, and even if you don't term limit me, I certainly will term limit myself. Thank you for that question.
Mr. Schiffer.
Well, I absolutely support term limits. I support the six-term term limit for members of the House and two-term term limit for members of the Senate. You know, we have term limits for Vice President and President. I don't see why we shouldn't have term limits for members of the legislative branch also. You know, they spend 30 years or more in government and then just do whatever they want to, basically. And we the people have to live under the laws, and we're expected to follow the laws, and they just break the laws whenever they want to. You know.
That's an absurd statement.
That's absurd.
I haven't broken any laws.
Do you have two covered boathouses on your property?
No.
You don't?
No. Mr. Schickles,
well, we're getting out of track here.
And if you lived here, you might know the answer to that question. Ladies and gentlemen, let me say that we have term limits. This is what this forum is about. This is what this forum is about. What you're really saying is you want to preclude the people's judgment from being made. What you're really saying, my two friends to my right, is we can't beat Hoyer, get rid of Hoyer by legislative fiat. If the public thinks that I don't represent them, they'll replace me. That is our system. That's what the founding fathers that my friend on the far right here likes to tell us all the time. Respect your founding fathers. They did not put term limits in the Constitution of the United States because they believed the people could make that judgment. They believed the people could judge the performance of its representatives, the performance of its senators, and re-elect them or not based upon that judgment. I believe in the people's judgment. The gentleman to my far right, Mr. Lawler, says I said something at Northern High School, which I never said. Never said that. Those of you who were there, we watched the television tape of that, you're welcome to do it. I never said that. I care very deeply about what the people think. I care very deeply about representing working Americans. I care very deeply about people, for instance, who have pre-existing conditions and can't get insurance. I care very deeply about young people who can't find a job and are 23, 24, can't get insurance. I care very deeply about somebody who has cancer and can't get coverage. So, yes, I care.
Thank you. And let me remind the candidates that the audience is asking the questions of you, not of each other. And I would like to remind the folks in the hall and outside, I know it's cold outside, but please restrain your responses to some of these questions. Thank you. This question will begin with Mr. Schickel, and the question is, what do you believe that Congress must do first to tackle the problem of the national debt?
First and foremost, I think we need to cut spending. We don't have a choice in this matter as far as I'm concerned. We're spending far more money than we have. We're binge borrowing from places like China. We owe these countries untold amounts of money, and unless we cut spending and start paying down this debt, we're not going to have a country as far as I'm concerned. Now, I've made many spending cut proposals, and, you know, a few months ago, Nancy Pelosi said that we're all going to have to suffer together. Well, I think we should take her up on that offer. I think we can immediately start by cutting pay for president, vice president, members of the House and Senate to down to $100,000 a year with a permanent cap on $100,000 a year. I think we do things like taking away pensions for members of the House and Senate. I think we can do away with extra pay for serving on committees. I think we can do away with all types of little perks that our elected officials get. And while we're doing that, we can also start on big ticket items like bringing our troops home from overseas, which Mr. Hoyer's party promised they were going to do 4 years ago and haven't done yet. At the same time, we can start ending programs like the war on drugs, which is taking up tens of billions of dollars or our tax dollars every year. And all we're doing is handing over power to street-level gangs and multinational, international cartels that are now starting to assault our borders.
Thank you, Mr. Hoyer.
Well, the specifics to which the previous speaker spoke, of course, are interesting, but not addressing the real problem. This deficit that confronts us is dangerous and must be dealt with. We adopted a program in 1993 that I voted for, no Republican voted for, which created a $5.6 trillion surplus as of March of 2001. A $5.6 trillion surplus. The policies that we then pursued thereafter raised the national debt by $5 trillion, from 5.7 to $10.7 trillion, and ran a deep deficit every year, $2.68 trillion to be exact. I have made a speech just about 2 months ago which said that everything needed to be on the table. The only thing that shouldn't be on the table, in my view, is interest on the national debt. America will pay its bills and meet our obligations. That's the kind of country we are. But at the same time, we need to consider all of the items of expenditure on our national table. Why? Because it is not only an intellectually bankrupt policy, but an immoral policy to keep spending without paying. That's why we adopted statutory paygo. That's why we have put in place a commission to make recommendations on December 1st about how we reduce the deficit. And that's why we cut $8 billion from the president's budget in our budget enforcement resolution.
Thank you. Mr. Lawler.
If we're going to do something about the debt, the national debt, we have to take the debt seriously. And in that regard, I think there's some similarities, but at least in word, but in practice and in application, that's where the problem is. I think you start by taking it seriously and say to yourself this: if in fact the general populace of America is struggling right now with one of the worst deficits that our nation has seen since the Depression, then you don't vote yourself a pay increase. That's a good place to start. We have to deal with consumer confidence that's out there. It's very, very low. Which means people aren't spending their money. The average business nationwide is holding on to almost $1.74 trillion in expenditures that they're holding back. They're not creating jobs. They're not being inventive and innovative because there's no confidence in the current administration and the leadership in Congress. So we have to make some deep-seated changes and take balancing the budget seriously. There's $60 billion out there in unspent stimulus. Why haven't we retracted that back? Another $10 billion in federal vehicles. Why haven't we retracted that back? Another $2.5 billion in federally owned land that we're not using. Why haven't we done something with that? Another $3.5 million for a ballpark that was built out in Arizona, the Diamondbacks, that if you go to watch the Arizona Diamondbacks play in it, you'd be charged a cover charge. So much is not being revealed to everyday citizens that's tucked into these bills. And then when we uncover those poor spending habits, we're called everything but a child of God. If we're going to take this thing seriously, let's look at what we're doing and make sure we're making the hard decisions to balance the budget.
Mr. Hoyer, on illegal immigrants, do you think there should be legislation requiring the reporting of illegal aliens who receive medical treatment?
I I think there should be reporting. We ought to know that. As you know, illegal immigrants on the health care bill are not eligible for dollars. We obviously have to spend money on those who are either legally here, but are citizens of this country. So from that standpoint, the answer, I suppose, is yes in terms of reporting. However, having said that, what we need to do is stop illegal immigrants from coming into the United States of America. We have to secure our borders, which is why we've added 1,000 new border agents. We've substantially increased the budget for the Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency so that we would make sure that we reduce this very substantial number of people coming into our country, which we don't know about. That's, first of all, a great concern with respect to terrorism and our security, and it's secondly a tremendous burden on our public expenses. From that standpoint, we have to get a handle on our borders, and we are taking steps to do that. Very frankly, immigration went up during the early part of this last decade. Illegal immigration. So the answer is yes.
Mr. Lawler.
See, this is what I'm talking about. This is exactly what I'm talking about. That in rhetoric and discussion, there's a lot of similarities. But in actuality or in application, there's none. When it comes to illegal immigration, it's one of the largest debts that our nation has to endure every single year. If we don't take immigration seriously and do something about it, like providing the borders, both the north and southern borders, with proper securities, we need to step up and provide our states and empower our governors on these border states to do the right thing. That's a federal responsibility. While our states are carrying the load on their own, I don't know. If we can go into Afghanistan and Iraq, and I can tell you this as a Marine officer, secure borders there, why can't we do it here in our own homeland? It's because we're not taking it seriously. My congressman voted no on building a fence along the Mexican border, September 2006. Voted no on preventing tipping off of Mexicans to the Minuteman Project. Voted no on reporting illegal aliens who receive hospital treatment, but yet he just said yes, he would. That's the frustrating part for me as a Marine officer. I do all I can to give information that's accurate and true, and it's very difficult when that is not returned in kind.
Could you please repeat the question? I want to make sure I heard it correctly.
On illegal immigrants, do you think there should be legislation requiring the reporting of illegal aliens who receive medical treatment?
I honestly don't know, because I don't know to what purpose that would be used for. The question is a little unclear in my mind. What I can say and what I have said before is that we can't expect American citizens to follow the laws of this nation if we don't expect non-citizens to follow the laws of this nation. We cannot allow people to be living here illegally. We cannot allow people to be living here undocumented, not knowing where they came from. Regardless of what country it is, it doesn't matter if it's from Mexico or Zimbabwe or wherever it is. It just does not matter. We cannot allow people to be living in this country illegally without documentation and not knowing what kind of people are coming into our nation. We have a lot of unscrupulous and undesirable people that were born here. We don't need more people like that coming into our nation. Thank you.
Thank you. Ooh. This question will begin with Mr. Lawler. The United States is famous for team sports. We love football, basketball, baseball. We can agree that there is loyalty to one's team. That being said, the country is sick and tired of partisan politics. Putting parties aside, what separates you as a person? How do you think and discern your decisions on your own, separate from party?
What an outstanding question, because I've often said to anyone who would listen that I consider myself an American candidate who happens to be conservative and Republican. For me, our country has to come first, because many of the issues that we face, especially where we go from here, have very little to do with partisan politics, as much as it has to do with common sense answers that you and I can figure out sitting around our dinner table. And anytime we bring parties in and say, well, we were better under this Democrat president or this greatest Republican president. At this case and at this time in our nation's history, it's always better if we do things the American way. I remember being in Kosovo. I tell you, when you're in a foxhole next to someone and the bullets start flying, you don't care if they're Republican or Democrat. You don't care what gender they are or race. You just want to make sure you can get out of there together and get back home to your families. Some of the things that separate me is my love for our country, my respect for the direction we're going, the fact that I'm willing to serve and put my life on the line for freedom, the Constitution, and my family. And even still, thank you, sir, even still, it's very important for us to follow the governing of our Constitution. It's not just something that we should refer to. It's something that we should absolutely use as a benchmark for where we need to go in the future. We cannot make up the rules as we go along. A balanced budget, that's not partisan. It's what you do at home. If you don't have as much revenue coming in as expenses going out, you cut somewhere on the expense line, not try to find a way to print more money. All of these things, in my opinion, help to separate myself. I'm not going to say from everyone, but I'll certainly say that's the principles I stand on.
Thank you. Mr. Schickel.
The reason I became a libertarian is because I believe in the principles of the Libertarian Party, and that is that the wants of the individual supersede the desires of the state. Now, there are many other principles, but that's one of the ones I hold dearest to me. Now, my decision-making and my party, or as regards my party, are pretty much one and the same. I believe that the Libertarian Party is the only party that actually fights for the rights of the individual in this country. Now, I will not back away from that, and I will continue to be a libertarian. I will continue to stand for those principles as long as I feel that my party actually embodies those principles.
Thank you, Mr. Hoyer.
Thank you very much. I think bipartisanship is an objective that we all ought to seek. It takes two, however, to tango. It takes both sides to agree to do that. I'm going to talk a little bit about that later on. But my friend, Mr. Waller, I don't think really got to the question. The issue is whether a party that has opposed banking reform, a party that has opposed overwhelmingly credit card reform, so average working Americans were protected from that, a party that opposed imposing statutory paygo so that we'd have to pay for things as we bought, that originally supported it when they were sponsoring it, but opposed it when Kent Conrad, a Democrat in the United States and a conservative Democrat from North Dakota, was sponsoring. Rhetoric is easy. Substance is tough. Having nice speeches sound good, but it doesn't get you to where you want to go. And where you want to go is to work together to solve problems. I've been there for 44 years in the state Senate and in the Congress. If you ask Jack Cade, who was the minority leader of the Maryland State Senate, he would say, Steny Hoyer and I worked together. If you ask Roy Blunt, the minority whip of the Congress of the United States up until 2 years ago, he would say, Steny Hoyer and I worked together.
Thank you.
The next question will start with Mr. Schickel. If elected, what will you do for the 5th Congressional District?
Well, the first thing what I'd like to say is that I'm going to do for the 5th Congressional District what I would like to see happen for all of America, that is, getting this debt under control, getting this government under control, getting this government out of our daily lives, and getting back to the job that our government was meant to do, which is facilitate our daily actions, not try and tell us how to live our daily lives.
Mr. Hoyer.
You know, when I first started representing St. Mary's County, it was 18 years ago, and there was a sign, a bumper strip that everybody had on their car. Keep Nessie here. I did that. I didn't do it alone. I did it in conjunction with working with a lot of people. But if you ask Bob Waxman, not somebody, frankly, who just registered 4 years ago, Not somebody who was running during that period of time for three separate offices and announcing to run for two others in the state of Georgia. If you ask people who were here, who watched the process, who know what happened, they will say, yes, Steny Hoyer made a difference on keeping NESE here. NESE provides 2,800 jobs. They will say that Steny Hoyer made a great deal of difference working with others to take Pax River, which was at some risk, from 12,000 jobs to 22,000 jobs today. They will say that Steny Hoyer in Prince George's County, Calvert County, Anne Arundel County, and Charles County has done things throughout the 18 years he's represented Southern Maryland and throughout the 30 years that he's represented Prince George's and Southern Maryland. It's nice to talk. I'm not going to go through the list. Many of you know it. One of Mr. Lawler's supporters told me the other day, I'm tired of hearing BRAC. Our bases are still at risk. I've done the job. I'll continue to do it. Thank you very much.
Mr. Lawler.
What would I do for the constituents in the 5th Congressional District? I will create an atmosphere where our citizens can get back to work. It's tough to pay your mortgage bills when you don't have a job. I will work in partnership with businesses across the 5th Congressional District, as well as corporations outside the 5th, as well as our governor, whoever it may be, to see if we can get more corporations to make decisions, to bring their jobs here to Maryland. What a great place to work, live, and play. We have some of the best resources here in our state. I'll take care of I'll work hard to ensure that the influence of our bases through national security is well known. That our bases are known for the quality of research, development, testing, and evaluation, and things they're known for because of hardworking admirals and captains and generals and, quite honestly, enlisted personnel as well, and the hard work they do on those bases every day, every week. So those bases aren't known for one person, but rather are known for a collection of individuals, teams, less I and more we. I'll ensure that the same way we look at bases like Quantico and Fort Meade and even Fort Gillem, you don't think about one person. You should never say that about our bases because they're so rich and fertile in terms of what they bring and what they present. And also, I will work very hard to ensure we develop necessary partnerships throughout the entire district so that we can encourage education, educational improvements, specifically through competition, allowing for charter schools, allowing for vouchers, so we can ensure that our students have the same opportunities as those who go to the private school.
Thank you. This question will begin with Mr. Hoyer. The question is, given that senior citizens will not be given a cost of living increase in their Social Security payments this year, can you explain or justify why federal employees will get a cost of living pay raise this year?
Well, federal employees have not gotten a pay raise this year, and I'm glad that question was asked. Mr. Lawler has said numerous occasions the Congress took a pay raise. The Congress did not take a pay raise and hasn't taken a pay raise for 2 years for exactly the reasons that he said accurately. Our country is experiencing great pain. And we have not taken a pay raise. I don't know why he keeps saying that. Either he doesn't know the answer or he's misrepresenting it. I don't know that. Now, with respect to the COLA, I think that's an issue that's going to be addressed, and I have some real thoughts that we ought to constrain federal employees as well as every other employee as well. The president has suggested a 1.4% increase in the cost of living based upon the law, which I will talk about in a minute. But I believe that we ought to review that, and I've talked to a number of federal employee unions and said to them, I think we need to have constraint here, given the tough times that confront all of our country.
Thank you. Mr. Lawler.
Thank you so much. Let me deal with the issue and then come back to a few statements. Our senior citizens deserve the best representation, specifically where their Social Security is concerned, bar none. They bought into an idea many years ago that if they set their money aside and trusted it to our federal government, they would have their Social Security to fall back on. To see that it did not get a cost of living increase is actually painful, not just for me, but I'm sure for so many seniors, and mainly because I want to work hard to represent you. We have to do something about these laws that are on the books that allow for Congress to stick their hands into Social Security and bail out their own pork barrel projects. We need to balance the budget. We need to do all those things that we talk about every day, common sense stuff, so we can ensure that our seniors continue to get what they've already rightfully paid into the system for. When it comes to these issues where Congress took a pay increase and other issues as such, like, for example, we did not make the comment at North Point High School that I'll go it alone. Please, when you're reviewing the video, pay attention to the very last question, because many of us were there and we did hear what was said. And I'm only saying that because if you're going to debate, if you're going to have a forum, be honest. That's all I ask. And as long as you're honest, I can sit on the podium with you. But if you're not, it's a bit difficult for me. Sometimes that Marine side comes out. You know?
Mr. Schickel.
Ooh. Before the time starts, can you please repeat the question, because I really want to make sure I heard that.
Certainly. The question was, given that seniors will not be receiving a cost of living increase in their Social Security payments, can it be justified that federal employees would receive a cost of living raise?
Well, I can tell you, as a member of a party who truly wants smaller government, that there is no justification for any spending increases that we are doing right now, for the most part. This question actually kind of takes me aback, because it's such a very direct and distinct question. I mean, you know, $14 trillion worth of debt is what we have right now, and that's the official debt. That's stuff that they can't hide off the books. You know, if you start adding Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac in there, then that'll immediately skyrocket by $6 trillion. You know, this country is drowning in debt. We have to cut spending. We have got to cut spending. It's not a choice at this point. If we want to have a country in the next 10 years, we have got to cut spending, and we're going to have to start across the board, everywhere. You know, as I've already said, we can start by cutting the pay for our elected leaders. We can start cutting, you know, we can start bringing our troops home from overseas. All these measures will save us money to pay towards this debt.
For the next question, we'll start with Mr. Lawler. And the question is, what have you done or would you do to improve transportation in Maryland?
Well, you don't have to sit too long on 301 or 210 or 4 on Tuesday morning to see that we have a huge problem when it comes to our transportation infrastructure. In some respects, Sean, it's a blessing, because we've been able to see, and in some respects, job growth that promoted more neighborhoods, which promoted more traffic. But did you know, for example, that Prince George's County, 25% of government employees come right from Prince George's County, another 10.5% to 12% from Charles County. We have to do a better job bringing satellite offices into the 5th Congressional District, specifically in Charles and in Prince George's County. I'm sure we could do some things here in St. Mary's and Calvert as well, but especially those two counties, because such a large amount of traffic leaves the home and goes into D.C. We also have to do a better job of seeing if we can promote more working from home. I like some of the programs that are already going on, where many of our federal workers can stay home on Fridays as long as they work an extra hour during the week. All of those things work well. But if we're going to fix our infrastructure problem, we're going to have to do more in terms of partnership, working full-time as congressmen and congresswomen, to make sure we're doing these things to take that excess traffic off the road. Then, with even more growth coming, at least we anticipate as such, we have to spend real dollars in building up these roads, especially in Charles and Prince George's County. It's going neglected for many reasons, which I can state, but we have to take transportation and our infrastructure seriously. You cannot grow at a rapid rate without keeping infrastructure in mind.
Mr. Schickel.
I'll tell you, this is a issue that we definitely need to work on, and I'll be honest with you, I don't know what the answer is. Yeah, I can tell you that it would benefit me greatly to be able to get this issue taken care of, because if I have an 8 o'clock call at somewhere, for instance, the Verizon Center or the Kennedy Center, I have to leave my house at 6 o'clock in the morning to make sure that I don't get caught in traffic and become late for work. You know, I would much rather leave my house at 7:20 or 7:30 to make it into D.C. if I have an 8 o'clock call. You know, so you can tell, you know, I deal with the same problem that many of you deal with, and that's congestion on the roads. If I, you know, like I said, if I have an 8 o'clock call, if I leave my house at 6:10, I risk being late for work, and I live in Indian Head. So it's definitely a problem that needs to be solved. I really just don't know what the answer is, and I wish I had a better answer for you than that, but I don't.
Mr. Hoyer.
Thank you. First of all, because we don't have any rebuttal in this debate, let me say it. I hear Mr. Lawler talking about the COLA. Very interesting, because at a forum he indicates that he's open to privatizing Social Security, which I think is not something that ought to be done, and I'm going to fight to make sure that those who are proposing privatizing Social Security don't prevail. His party is doing that through Mr. Ryan, who would be chairman of the Budget Committee. Now, on transportation, I can only assume, again, because Mr. Lala was in Georgia over the last 20 years that I've been working on transportation issues in Maryland, in Prince George's County, in Charles County, in St. Mary's County, in Calvert County, to this county, I brought $50 million alone. For transportation issues to make our roads better, to make them more passable, to widen 235, as all of those corporate jobs, apparently he thinks that 12,000 to 22,000 and other corporate jobs that came, he hasn't been down 235. You can't hardly go there for a week a year ago or 2 years ago or 3 years ago without seeing a new corporate entity coming to St. Mary's County. He said he wanted to do that. I've done it. Metro, I was one of the principal workers on that with whom? Frank Wolf. Who is Frank Wolf? A Republican from Virginia. He and I worked closely together in a bipartisan fashion. It's nice to talk about it, but you've got to do it. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And this question will begin with Mr. Schickel. Today in America, the unemployment rate is 9.6%, and it has been above 9% for 17 straight months. As a member of the next Congress, what would you do differently than the current Congress to spur economic growth and job creation?
Well, I'll tell you what I won't say to you is that I'm going to create a lot of jobs, because, you know, government cannot create jobs. If government could create jobs, 15 million people would not be out of work right now. Now, lots of people like to tell you that they can create jobs, and they have created jobs, even though they don't own a business themselves. Now, entrepreneurs are the ones who provide jobs for this nation, and we've got to get this government out of their way. We have unsustainable levels of taxation, unreasonable levels of taxation on our businesses. We have all these unburdensome regulations that are dragging them down. And I can tell you from personal experience with my family's restaurant that government regulation can put businesses out of business. You know, a lot of times people like to think that what they're doing is helping people, but what they're really doing is sucking the lifeblood out of the private sector in this nation.
Mr. Hoyer.
In the last administration, we lost almost 9 million jobs. We were in a deep, deep hole when this administration took office. Since that time, under the Recovery Act, which we passed just 31 days after President Obama took office, we have either gained or saved 3 million jobs. Now, if you lose 9 million and gain 3 million, you still have an extraordinary deficit. So what have we done? We've cut taxes on small businesses 16 times. We've said if you hire a new employee that is unemployed, we'll excuse the FICA tax. So you don't have to pay that. Not only that, if you keep them on a year, we'll give you a $1,000 bonus. Now, my friend says the federal government can't create jobs. Apparently, nobody up here is listening to me. I hope you are back there. We've created thousands and thousands and thousands of jobs in St. Mary's County, in Prince George's County, and in Charles County over the last 18 years. Thousands of them, and all you have to do is ride down 235 to know that's the fact. Now, the fact is that I believe that we need to continue to build jobs. My time is very brief, so I won't go into the Make It in America, but I'm going to talk to you about that.
Thank you, Mr. Lawler.
Let me try to go at this from a bipartisan position just for a second. If you're going to spur job creation and growth, we have to be realistic about where jobs came from. I've said in many forms, if everyone worked for the federal government, then how would anyone get paid?
Right.
Federal government employees, bless their hearts, I'm one of them as a Marine officer, we get paid because of tax dollars. Tax dollars that are generated from businesses, private businesses, and everyday citizens. If we're going to pull the unemployment rate down, we have to create private jobs. We can't keep creating government jobs and call that job creation, because that's money coming from private businesses to pay for those that are government employees. I just want to do this so simple that everyone on the dais can follow. It's very important for us to make sure the atmosphere in our country works well so private business can afford to continue to be innovative, inventive, and hire people. $1.74 trillion out there not being spent. Why? Because private business doesn't want to spend the money, because they don't have confidence in every day in our current leadership. When we change that leadership, when we get back to the fundamentals of lower taxation, specifically for businesses, if you expect to penalize business, even if you call them the wealthy, if you expect to penalize them because of the success that they've had, and then expect them to hire people, it's about like going home and telling your husband he's an idiot and expect him to work for you. You can't cut your nose off to spite your face. If we can generate business to open up their doors of employment, they'll get it done for us. I don't have enough time to go into detail.
The next person to talk is Mr. Horner. Would you support a constitutional amendment that would require a balanced budget?
I did. I voted for it. I have done that. The reason I've done that is because it is extraordinarily difficult if you do not have an extrinsic force outside. Now, my party did not support that. Some people talked about not following as a team your party. In this case, I voted for the balanced budget amendment, and I voted for it because I believed that you need an extrinsic constraint. You have 435 members of the House of Representatives elected to represent their districts and the people they represent. And if they don't have an extrinsic constraint, then they will simply add on. Frankly, that's what's happened. Now, very frankly, again, my friend, Mr. Lawler, who's been here a short time in our state, doesn't apparently understand me. He says, I don't understand. The jobs that I'm talking about that have been created, so you understand, of the 2,657 jobs that are now at NESE, 1,678 of them are private businesses, private contractors. At the NESE base, we have 2,200 contractors and only 450 civilian and 7 military. These are private sector jobs. Apparently, I can't get that across to Mr. Lawler, or he chooses to ignore it. My time is up, unfortunately.
Mr. Lawler.
Wow, I'm so glad I get this chance to go second in rotation for this one. A great lesson on contractor jobs. But last I checked, contractor jobs contract with the government, so it's our tax dollars that are paying them. A little disconnect there, John, a little disconnect. He said he voted for the constitutional amendment, and I'm proud of him for that, but for some reason, over 4 years as the majority leader, he hadn't been able to balance one. In fact, since we're going to go there, we left Washington, D.C. without even passing a budget, but instead campaigning, which I don't blame you for that, sir. So if we're going to talk about what we've done, let's ensure that we complete the story. Would I support a constitutional amendment? Absolutely, but I will go one better. I will work bipartisanly with everyone involved to ensure that is the first order of business. We have to present a balanced budget, increase consumer confidence that will bring in additional revenues. We can get our country back working and lower unemployment rates again.
Mr. Shepard.
I apologize. I was enjoying their exchange so much.
Me too.
They're down.
Would you support a constitutional amendment that would require a balanced budget?
You know, if by chance wonderful people of the 5th District decide to elect me, yes, I would support legislation of that matter. I really can't say for sure whether or not that could actually get put in place. And quite frankly, even if it did, I'm pretty sure that our government leaders would just try and find ways around it anyway, which they do all the time. There's been I can't name them off the top of my head, but there's been plenty of times when laws have been passed that said that we are no longer going to do whatever we're not going to do anymore, and then you find out a few years later that they found some loophole, or that they put some obscure loophole in there that just allowed them to get around that law anyway. But again, I did enjoy the exchange between my colleagues.
This question will begin with Mr. Lawler. The question concerns health care reform. How can health care be provided for an additional 30 million or more people without affecting service quality?
Well, that's an outstanding question. And to answer it directly, I'm not sure if it can, but I can tell you that if we're going to fix our health care problem in our country, we're going to have to do so in a bipartisan spirit with a focus on the free market and not necessarily a focus on the government. We have to attack the problem of health care, which are premiums. The premiums are extremely too high. Some folks would believe that it's the same old rhetoric happening over and over again, but I'll tell you this much. Let's give it a shot and do it the right way. Let's do it constitutionally. Let's attack tort reform. Let's make sure that you can't sue someone $16 million for stumping your toe on your property. Let's ensure that we allow small insurance companies so they can compete across state lines for your business, thus lowering the price structure. I've talked to doctors at Prince George's Southern Maryland Hospital, Vista, so many. I didn't get these ideas out of my head. I asked the experts the best way to come at this thing. And we can do it without obligating an additional 16,000 IRS agents to the rosters of government to run after you to ensure that you buy health care. And also provide loopholes for those that want to jump in and out based upon their pre-existing conditions, let alone allowing government to compete with everyday private insurance companies for businesses by using their tax dollars. These things are not the right way to go. The biggest opposition many had to this health care bill wasn't the bill itself as much as it was a 2,000-page unread force jammed through my throat, tell me how you like it kind of thing. That's the thing.
Thank you, Mr. Schiffer.
Now, while I agree that changes did need to be made, I feel that this health care bill was the absolute wrong direction to go. Now, when this health care bill was passed, we were told that it gave our government power to force us to buy health insurance because we weren't being forced to buy a specific policy from a specific company. Now, The Lord of the Rings has more basis in fact than that. Now, we were also told that we shouldn't be worried that if future governments try to force us to engage in other activities that we didn't want to do, that we shouldn't be worried about that fact, because if that happened, then the courts would decide that was unconstitutional. Now, anyone with a passing knowledge of how our government works realizes that you don't get to just punt that responsibility to the courts. The legislature is supposed to make sure that a bill is constitutional before they vote on it. Now, if somebody who's been in office for 30 years doesn't understand that, then they really don't deserve to continue in office, because those are the words of Mr. Hoyer. You know, we shouldn't be worried that the government's going to try and force us to purchase anything or engage in other activity, because the courts will just make sure that that doesn't happen. Well, I can tell you myself that that does not give me great comfort.
So this will be the last of the...
Do I get to answer that?
Yes. Absolutely. Would you just like to skip
me? About that. Yes, please. Absolutely.
I thought maybe these two had assumed the vote had already been taken. Think of the premise of the question. 35 million Americans or 50 million Americans. We can't give them health care because it'd just be too much burden on us, so let them be on their own. Let them be on their own. Ladies and gentlemen, the richest country on the face of the earth to have Americans who don't have access to affordable quality health care, in my opinion, is not consistent with my faith. Reach out and lift up. Feed the hungry. Care for the sick. Now, Mr. Lauer again talks about the private sector. Let's take care of it. What does this bill do? It sets up a marketplace for private insurance companies to offer their insurance. Mr. Lauer talks about the COLA and Social Security. We force people, of course, to pay Social Security tax, you understand, so that they will have the availability when they're seniors, and you can amortize it so it will be cost-effective. That's why we do that. That's why we did that in this plan. So that individuals would not just expect you and I to pay for them, they would participate themselves because we know, inevitably, all of us are going to need health care. We ought to participate with all the rest of us in making sure we have a system that provides it. Thank you very much.
Okay, the next question will be, this question will be the last question. It will start with Mr. Schickel. With St. Louis County unemployment at 12% and Calvert, Charles, Prince George's, and Anne Arundel counties between 7 and 8%, what will you do to bring those numbers down?
Well, as I've already said, politicians and government cannot create jobs. Only entrepreneurs can create jobs. And you know, we've got to get this government under control. We've got to get this government out of our lives. Our business owners have no confidence in this government and the direction of this nation. And if we're going to give them that confidence, we have to get this government out of our daily lives. This government tries to run our daily lives. There is not a single aspect of our daily lives that is not touched by our federal government. Not a single aspect of our daily lives. Now, if we expect people to risk their capital and risk their reputations to create jobs, we've got to let them know that they have the support of a government that's not going to be interfering with every single aspect of their lives.
Mr. Hoyer.
First of all, I want to remind everybody, I know it sounds tiring, but under the program that my two friends to my right opposed, we created 21 million private sector jobs. Not government. We created an environment in which 21 million private sector jobs. Under the economic program that Mr. Lauer presumably supports in his Republican Party, we lost almost 9 million jobs. That's a 30 million job turnaround in 16 years. That's why people aren't in pain. What we have been doing is trying to invest in creating that confidence. Now, let me tell you the program I have that I told you I'd refer to. I want Americans to believe they can make it in America, succeed in America, take the opportunities that America has to offer. And one of the ways we want to do it, and we passed bills through the House of Representatives already to do that, and passed bills which have been signed by the President, is to create an environment in which you can make it in America, manufacture it in America, grow it in America, and sell it to the rest of the world. That's the way we're going to create good-paying jobs with good benefits and security for working people in this country. We need to make it in America, and we need to make it in America. That's an agenda that I believe ought to be front and center. And when I'm reelected, if I'm reelected, with your help, that's an agenda I'm going to pursue.
Mr. Lauer.
If I can use about 10 seconds to say that I do not want 32 to 50 million Americans to go without insurance, health insurance. And that has been an emotional ploy that has been done so many times. As I continue to get lumped into a party, a class, a system, my heart goes out just as much to every single person. My family understands that. I understand that. So I want to make sure that's addressed. It's not about not having compassion and concern for those that don't have health insurance. It's about accountability and finding ways to solve the problem that are at least constitutional. We have created an entitlement society by which we
go out and buy what we want and we beg for what we need. That has to change. We have to hold ourselves accountable for what we do. I remember watching someone in a soup line getting a bowl of soup from the First Lady. She was kind enough to come down to a charitable organization and provide free soup for folks. Well, the gentleman standing in line to get a bowl of soup whipped out his BlackBerry and took a picture of the First Lady giving him soup. Now, I'm not the sharpest tool in the shed, but if I can afford a BlackBerry, I can afford a bowl of Progresso soup. We're going to have to start taking responsibility for what we do in all aspects and find a way for those that need health care, taking it case by case to do it in a way that supports the constitutionality of a bill and addresses the actual problem, which is the price structure, the cost structure. In short, because I'm short on time, I believe in the American people. Our backs have been against the wall before. We can do it again if we create the right atmosphere that brings private jobs into our country and into our district.
Thank you. It is now time for each candidate. It is now time for each candidate to deliver their closing remarks. I would ask the audience to withhold your applause until after all candidates have made their statements. And by pre-selection, the closing statements will begin with Mr. Lawler.
Let me thank, may I stand?
Absolutely.
I appreciate it. I want to thank everyone for being here.
Just over there. It'd be easier to go over there.
Oh, thank you so much.
Certainly.
We're just trying to help you.
Thank you, sir.
Bipartisan.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much, kind sir. You're way too kind. I hope to return the favor by letting you spend more time with your grandchildren in the future. This is not a partisan issue. It really isn't. It's about a philosophical difference between where our country is and where it's going. I don't want to be perceived as a one that presents any type of personal attacks. I have nothing against my opponent personally, and I've said this before, that I would fight for him in Kosovo the same way I fought for my four daughters. The issue is not a personal one because we're all Americans at the end of the day. But here is the issue. We haven't failed, we failed as a majority leader not to pass a balanced budget. We've also failed to pass a budget period, instead coming back home to campaign. At the same time, in fact, it was the 29th of this month, just yesterday, that the response of my opponent was, we are in, if I might read his response, Nancy Pelosi is a hardworking, focused individual trying to do the best thing she can for the American public. We don't read the bills unless we're mandated by our constituency. And in context, we kind of go along to get along. I say no. I say the opportunity to recognize Americans for who they are is right now. I say the time to make sure every American has equal rights and allows them to compete for equal things. I say it's time now for us to get back our constitutional government, do the right thing that we're supposed to by our budget, rebuild confidence in the everyday consumer so we can return our country back to the greatness it was founded. When the founding fathers stepped off the boat, there was no Bank of America to give them a loan. There was no development company to build them a home, but they understood freedom, and if you leave their tax dollars alone, they could innovatively build the greatest nation on God's green earth. All of us weren't represented there at that time, but we are now. We can turn a corner. And if we've done it once, we can do it again. I believe in the greatness of our country. And come November the 2nd, I would truly appreciate your vote. Thank you so much, and God bless you all for being here.
Mr. Schickel, would you like to use the podium?
No, I'll go ahead and sit right here. Thank you. I actually think I can be heard better. Oh. Mr. Hoyer likes to talk about all his ability to create jobs, but the fact of the matter is that Mr. Hoyer does not create any jobs because Mr. Hoyer does not own a business. He's never risked his capital, and he's never risked his reputation in the free market. But I can tell you about one business where he had a huge impact, and that was my family's restaurant, because Mr. Hoyer helped put my family out of business. Now, you see, in 1996, Mr. Hoyer, along with the Republican-controlled Congress, decided to raise minimum wage. Now, I don't know if you support that or not. Now, when they raised minimum wage on my family, it added about $45,000 worth of extra cost to our business. Now, we held on for a little while, but ultimately that business failed. And somehow my family didn't qualify for a bailout. Now, when this happened, I lost not only my job, but I also lost my house at the same time. I went from being a self-employed young man with the entire universe of possibilities ahead of him to living out in my car and not knowing where my next meal would come from. So you think about that. You think about that when Mr. Hoyer tells you about his acumen with creating jobs. You think about that when a Republican candidate tells you that their job, that their party is a party of constitutionally limited government. You think about that when somebody tells you that the government has not done enough. Now, when you see things the way I do, you realize that this country is being, we are being lied to and manipulated all the time. We are being lied to and manipulated by self-serving individuals. Now, I will make this promise with you, okay? I will wake up every morning, I will think about you, I will fight and sweat and bleed for you, I will fight to get this government under control, I will fight to get this government out of our lives, and I will fight to put the power back in your hands so that each and every one of us can reach our full potential in this country. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Hoyer.
Again, I want to thank St. Mary's College, I want to thank the NAACP, and I want to thank all of you for being here, whether you're for me or for Mr. Shuckle or for Mr. Lawler. I want to thank you for being here. This is what democracy is about. I have been in office for a significant period of time, and I've heard stories like that. That's why I supported unemployment insurance extension, so that the pain that you see reflected here, it gets some help. Get somebody to reach out a hand and help. Not for charity's sake, but because that's what we ought to do as a moral society, in my view. Now let me say something. Results. I'm not a pig in a poke. You know what I can do. You know what I have done. You know what I believe. Here's what I said on December 7th, 1991, when I announced for this district. I run for re-election with a firm conviction that what the people of our district want is a congressman who's honest, who is effective, and who is representative of their best aspirations and hopes for their community and their country. I believe I've done that. But it's not just about what I've done for the bases or what I've done for transportation or what I've done to bring jobs to this district. I was the chairman of the Helsinki Commission on Security and Cooperation in Europe. And I went to the Soviet Union and talked about political freedom, talked about human rights, talked about religious freedom. I was the sponsor of the Americans with Disabilities Act. For those of you who may know or are disabled, 43 million Americans have more access in America today because I was the principal sponsor of the Americans with Disabilities Act and worked with the first President Bush in a bipartisan way to get over 400 votes for that bill. I worked for the Federal Employee Pay Comparability Act also with President Bush and Frank Wolf from Virginia, a Republican, so that federal employees would get fair pay. Now, the Tea Party apparently wants to lay off 25% of the federal employees. I don't know which 25% they want to leave at Pax River. I sponsored the Help America Vote Act, which gives us a more efficient system than we had in 2000 when the system failed. I've worked with Roy Blunt and Senator Kit Bond, a Republican, on the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. We had a terrorist act just yesterday. I'm concerned about that. That's why I did not join all my party. And my party, and some people in my party, were critical of me. But I thought passing the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, working with President George Bush II, was the right thing to do for America. Ladies and gentlemen, I hope you believe I have worked on behalf of our country, on behalf of our state, on behalf of our district, and on behalf of a better future. If you do, I ask you to keep me on the job. Thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, you can now officially applaud and show your signs of approval.